We bring in Mary Kay Cabot from the Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com. Hello, Mary Kay. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Mary Kay.
I almost jumped in your meeting again. I thought about it, and I'm like, no, man, they are deep into a meeting after the Browns game. They do this wonderful.
And you go to interrupt. Nice.
I'm like, I can't interrupt. There's no way. And so it wasn't you. Somebody was holding court, and I'm like, yeah, I can't go in that. I was like, this is such a great story. Anyway, Mary Kay, what did you think? I know you're totally bored with everything I just said, but what do you...
Welcome to my life,
how
Mary Kay.
How do you fix the Browns? Fix the Browns.
Well, first of all, jump into our meeting anytime that you want to.
I am.
We will welcome you. You can give us your thoughts and ideas, and we would love to have you.
Okay, awesome. I'll even go. I can be like a ghost thought person in there. Okay. Not even a ghost writer.
Sure. I'm away.
That was convincing.
Thanks, Mary Kay.
As far as I gave you the Romeo Crennel, sure. As far as fixing the Browns is concerned, the first thing that has to happen is they have to fix the protection schemes, the protection issues, and Deshaun Watson cannot be getting hit 17 times a game. That's not going to fly. So he's been sacked a league high 16 times, hit 42 times. He was rotating that shoulder on the bench after the sack fumble. These kinds of things can't happen, or he's not going to make it through the next 3 or 4 games. This has got to stop. It's not going to get any easier now that they're going to be without Wyatt Teller for at least 4 games, maybe more, with his MCL sprain. So they've got to get this figured out. Hopefully for them, Zach Zinter will be ready to step in there at guard and do a nice job for them or someone else, whoever they decide to go with. And then at left tackle, who knows, maybe Jack Conklin will be ready to play this week. Both tackles are struggling coming off of these knee surgeries. We knew it was going to be an issue. We didn't know that it was going to be this bad. DeWand is struggling. Jed struggled in his first game back. Jack's not out there yet. So they've got to get this figured out. They're going up against Max Crosby, one of the best in the NFL. I would put him right up there with Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons as just premier edge rushers who can wreck a game. And they've got to get this figured out. I don't know if they can go jumbo again. I don't know what they can do. But everyone has to pitch in to make sure that Deshaun gets protected. Maybe Dave Njoku will be back. That will help them out in terms of blocking. But they've got to go back to the drawing board in terms of getting him and keeping him upright.
All right, Mary Kay, we hear a lot of things about, well, Bill Callahan's not here. That's the problem. Is that a bigger problem than health? I don't think it is. You tell me.
Well, there's really no way of knowing that. You can't quantify that, really, or measure that. I think that a lot of it does have to do with the fact that they haven't had stability at the tackle positions because of the injuries for the most part. So they have to get that figured out. If you told anyone that they were going to go into the season and really not have a stable left tackle situation for the first 3 games, I think that would have been a huge concern. And it has proven to be that. So is it because Bill Callahan's gone? I don't know. I'm sure there's probably some adjustment period to the new way of doing things. But I think it probably has more to do with lack of health at the positions.
Oh, the Baskin sigh.
Yeah,
Mary Kay.
It's the injury thing. I see people pointing fingers all over the place. Jeff just brought it up. I mean, we're sitting here, we're trying to figure out if Andy Dickerson's the reason the offensive line is reeling, and I'm like, injury. I mean, it's not like Andy walks in the building and says, "Oh man, how am I going to take care of this if this guy's out for a couple weeks?" Those are things you don't want to think about and don't probably want to have to deal with until after the fact. There's a lot of finger pointing going on, and I don't know which direction is the right one, and I don't know how this thing's going to end. That's the thing. And until they get healthy, I don't think it's really fair to assess anything. And the other part of it is Deshaun. It's like Deshaun's on track to being sacked 90 times this year. 90. How do you make an assessment of that?
Well, it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. And he's going to have to do his part, too, to be more willing maybe to throw the ball away or to get rid of it a little bit quicker. He likes to hang on to it until the very last second because he knows that he is a Houdini and he can get out of most things. But in this case, being available for his football team is going to be the most important thing. So he's got to do his part. The coaching staff, certainly, they've got to figure some things out. They might have to bring in some reinforcements from somewhere. I don't even know where they would begin to look. And then, you know, they've got to shuffle things around. Maybe you do have to put Joel Bitonio at left tackle for the time being. Maybe it would be easier for someone to play guard and step in there than it would be for someone to step in at left tackle if Jack Conklin's not ready. Hopefully for them, Jack will be ready, and then we'll see what's going on with the other guys. But they've got to come up with some kind of blocking schemes or more of a running game or something to help with this protection. And then the defense has to do its part early in games and not be giving up touchdowns so that the Browns don't dig themselves into a hole at halftime. In each of the first two games, when he was sacked, you know, 6 or 8 times and hit 17, they were down 20-3 at halftime in the opener and 21-7 in this past game. That's a recipe for disaster. The other team is going to pin back their ears and come after you. So they cannot dig themselves into those kind of holes.
Mary Kay, 12 carries by the running backs against the Giants in a game that, though it was 21-7 at halftime, I mean, you can get back into a game running the football. Did that number surprise you?
Yeah, I was surprised that they only had 7 yards in the first half. Sometimes you don't even realize it until you look down at the numbers and, and see what's happening there. But that did surprise me because they had given up 215 yards rushing the week before. And certainly right now, this is a football team that needs to be running the ball while its passing game comes together. So that did surprise me, and they do have to get that figured out.
Mary Kay, what's the most surprising team in the AFC North? Is it Cincinnati being 0-3? Is it Pittsburgh being 3-0? Or, I don't know, maybe perhaps Baltimore or maybe in the Browns?
You know, the Steelers and the Bengals for me right now are tied for that award of being the most surprising. I certainly didn't see the Steelers being 3-0 at this point, and I did not see the Bengals being 0-3. I don't know which one I would count as more surprising. Like I said, right now they're about tied for me. But if you made me pick one, I would probably go with Bengals at 0-3, because once you get to 0-3, it gets really hard to climb back into the playoff picture, especially in this very, very difficult AFC North. So I think this sets up for quite an interesting AFC North hard knocks in those final 6 weeks of the season, when the eyes of the nation will be on these teams.
You okay with the corners? And Malik Nabers kind of put a spotlight on everybody the other day in the first half, Mary Kay. I don't think cornerbacks are a problem on this team. Is the scheme with the corners any problem?
Well, you know, they're left out on an island a lot in man-to-man situations. And, you know, sometimes it's going to go your way and sometimes you're not going to make the play. But certainly I didn't think Martin Emerson had his best game. He knows he didn't have his best game. And, of course, Denzel Ward is still struggling with a shoulder injury. So he wasn't able probably to do everything that he would have done had he been 100% healthy. But I didn't think a number of the defenders had their best games on Sunday, and they're going to have to watch that film. And again, as Martin said after the game, look in the mirror, be very critical of themselves, and find out what they can do better. I just have to wonder if the Browns maybe didn't get a little complacent thinking that the Giants were beatable and they were absolutely supposed to win this game, favored by a touchdown. I don't know if they brought their AA-plus game.
Mary Kay, do you see a chemistry issue with Amari Cooper and Deshaun Watson? Obviously, Amari had a better game on Sunday, but do you see a chemistry issue between the two?
No, I think that whatever was wrong, I think got solved on Sunday. I think Amari needed to kind of get refocused a little bit, get rededicated, and he did that. He gut-checked himself, and he got himself back on track. So I don't think that this is going to be an ongoing issue for them. I think he's going to be an asset for Deshaun Watson going forward. And then when you bring David Njoku back into the mix, then he'll have his top two targets back out there. That will help a lot.
Do you think there was one? And do you think there was one going into this week?
I think the new offense is struggling. I think they're trying to pull it all together, and it's not there yet. They're still finding themselves. And people talk a lot about that they have an identity crisis. I'm just not buying that. I'm not buying the identity crisis thing, because here's the thing. You want to be multiple. You want sometimes to be able to run a spread offense and spring that on someone. Other times you want to go jumbo. I don't think you have to pick one and stick with that for the whole entire season. So I don't buy the whole identity crisis thing. I just think it's a brand new offense, some brand new players, and some issues along the offensive line, some injuries along the line, and it's just not working right yet.
Do we have a feel yet? I don't mean to go too big picture on this and ignore some obvious things, the injuries with the offensive line, but do we have a feel for what this offense is trying to do this year, maybe as compared to last year, Mary Kay?
Like I said before, they want to be an explosive offense, a high-scoring explosive offense, but there are more than one ways to get there. You can get there any kinds of ways. You can go, as I said before, you can go three wides, you can go spread, you can go up tempo, you can go jumbo, you can run the ball. I don't think you have to paint yourself into a corner and say, here's what we are. I just don't think you have to do that. I think you can, again, spring different things on different teams at different times, and you just have to do what you do well, whatever that is, under the umbrella of, okay, today we're jumbo and here's what we have to do. Okay, this week we're going spread and here's what we need to do. I don't think you have to box yourself into one kind of offense.
Jeff and I talked about this extensively yesterday. I just want to make sure I want your answer on this too, about the decision to run the ball way more than pass the ball in that game. And I understand that, you know, they were trying to come back in the second half, but it seemed to me like they kind of just
they ran it really well in the second half.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I'm a little confused on why they kind of abandoned the run, knowing the offensive line was really struggling.
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly why they do some of the things that they do. I do know that right now, being able to establish the run and stick with it is going to be important at a time when your passing game is struggling and your quarterback is getting hit. So if they can find a way to do that, they need to do it. But once again, it would involve not getting behind on the scoreboard as much as they have been. So if they can stay ahead, I think they have what it takes to run the ball. Once again, when you have issues up front, it does get a little bit more difficult to run the ball when you have injuries and guys that are not doing well up front. But I think they need to keep the running game viable for this offense to work.
All right, Mary Kay, I will bring ice cream to your next meeting. Because we know they give it away for free now. So I will bring ice cream
nice.
To your next Cleveland.com meeting. I just want you to know.
Well, it's going to be a long, long time from now. Because
oh, that's
we
right.
Are
we got 3 weeks. Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's why Andy said he'd do it.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, good.
He thinks I'll forget.
Yeah, no, they're on sale now. So I'll buy them while they're on sale. And then we'll take care of the rest of it. Mary Kay, thank you as always. Great stuff. We appreciate you.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot. No, I think that whatever was wrong, I think got solved on Sunday. I think Amari needed to kind of get refocused a little bit, get rededicated, and he did that. He gut checked himself, and he got himself back on track. So I don't think that this is going to be an ongoing issue for them. I think he's going to be an asset for Deshaun Watson going forward. And then when you bring David Njoku back into the mix, then he'll have his top two targets back out there. That will help a lot.
Oh, that was Mary Kay Cabot just moments ago on Baskin and Phelps talking about the relationship between Amari Cooper and Deshaun Watson out on the field. And is that as real as maybe you thought it was going into the game, that there might have been a lack of chemistry? All right, we're going to talk about that in a second.
Hogwash.
Hogwash, says Jeff. Jeff is going to disprove the theory of the lack of chemistry in just a moment. Rel is in Cleveland. Hi, Rel.
Hello, Rel.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas.
How are you?
Morning, afternoon. Yeah, I'm good, man. Just listening to you guys. I love to see y'all. Y'all my favorite. Y'all, Eddie.
Thank you.
Y'all was asking a question about, and you know, how can you fix the Browns? And you asked Mary Kay, and I love listening to Mary Kay because she's very knowledgeable and smart about what she's talking about. And I think we all know that they got that offensive line issues, mm-hmm. and that they could do better. They could do better up front with their protections. Now we're dealing with the injury bug with that offensive line. We've really been dealing with it all year. But last I checked, they started the season with four of the five starters from last year. You know what I'm saying? Like so I'm confused. Like the line can play better, but this is a good offensive line. Like up until recent years, and I mean, this is an offensive line that gets respected throughout the league and amongst his peers and everything. So I'm scratching my head and wondering, like, what is going on? And Dan, I got your back, brother. You are right. I watched Joe Petonio, and I love him. We talk about Hall of Fame, but I watched this man get thrown around like a rag doll the first two or three games of this season. It just makes absolutely no sense to me. And when you ask, how can you fix something, and I'm confused at what are we trying to fix? I mean, if I go in the toilet and use the toilet and it's not working, I can tell that the handle needs fixing, so I'll replace the handle. With this team, I don't know where to start. And as a Browns fan, it gets so frustrating because it's like year in and year out, we're having these same old routine conversations about this team, and I'm confused. Listen, I don't know. I usually don't even call a team bad until like the fourth or fifth week. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about our team. I'm talking about just amongst the whole league, because I watched this game. I've been loving this game since I was 8 years old. So I'm able to tell you exactly who you are at least by week five.
All right,
I don't want to call this Browns team a bad football team, but they're exhibiting bad habits like week in and week out. 2 weeks in a row, they showed up unprepared. And in this league, you get embarrassed when you show up unprepared. So maybe the fix is in between their ears and they can show up prepared. Thanks, guys.
Rel, thank you.
Thanks, Rel.
I think the aggravating part is like when you walk away and you still hear the water running for like 2 or 3 minutes and you're like, oh, the thing didn't catch. So then you got to go back in. You got to take the top off.
Got to lift it up.
And then all you have to do is just like –
touch
like,
it a little.
It's just a touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden that little balloon thing finally hits the mark it's supposed to. And then the water stops running.
Or just pour a bunch of water in.
Toilet talk here on Baskin and Phelps. Doesn't get any better than that. All right, Jeff.
Toilets!
That's right. I think he's right to a point. You know, I think Rel hit a lot of good spots on there that I think we all kind of look at this. And I thought Rel was leaning back towards saying maybe this is coaching issues. Maybe that more of this is on the coaching staff than it is on the players. Players have to execute on the field, though. That's the only thing. I sit here and there are times when I really think, wow, we got outcoached, or what was Kevin thinking on that play? Why didn't they run the ball more? Why didn't they do this and that? And I think those are legit questions after a loss. I think after a win, we sit around and go, oh, they ran the ball just enough to get the victory. That's all we care about. All it is a win in the win column. We do that all the time. It's just frustrating. They're frustrating to watch, aren't they? They're a frustrating team to watch right now.
Well, sure.
I just want to make sure
it's hard to argue with that right now.
Let's go back to what Mary Kay said. You know, we were asking about Mary Kay, and we were talking about the chemistry with Deshaun Watson and Amari Cooper. I thought it was significantly better on Sunday. I thought you could not have asked for a better first play, confidence-wise, from your leading receiver, which was a spectacular catch, too, because he was covered, and a great throw from Deshaun on the first play offensively where they scored the touchdown. And I thought, this is great. Were there some moments a little bit later in the game where I think he had – how many drops did he have in the game? Two? I know he had at least one. And I was like, oh, here we go again. What's going on? Why can't they connect? Is there a dysfunction to your leading receiver and your starting quarterback?
I don't think that's the case. You know, Amari, leading up to the game against the Giants, said, I've not played up to what I want to play up to. And I'll take care of that. And he did. I thought he played really well. I went back and took a look. And if you look at Amari's career, you know, he's had some games like the first two games. You know, there have been some moments where it's like, boy, is he out there? What's going on? But he always bounces back. He's a very consistent guy. He is prone to having these huge games that kind of skew things a little bit sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that last year. But I went back to last year because, you know, I've heard a lot, well, Amari and Deshaun, blah, 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 blah. Last year, in five games with Deshaun Watson, and I just broke it down, the five games where Deshaun played, and so I didn't count the Colts game where he didn't, you know, he threw like one or two passes and then got hurt. He caught 28 passes in five games with Deshaun. In four games with Joe Flacco, he caught 25. So that was three fewer. Mm-hmm. And in six games with DTR and PJ Walker, he caught 19. So the issues, if he had any issues last year, were probably with the young guys trying to fill in, right? More games, fewer catches. Mm-hmm. Yardage-wise, it was real similar. Five games with Watson, it was 480. Four games with Flacco, it was 485. But remember, he had that 265-yard receiving game against Houston.
Right.
And I'm not going to say that skewed anything because that's, I mean, terrific. You want games like that. But that's why that yardage total is so high. And then he had one more touchdown with Flacco than he did with Deshaun, and none with the other guys. So
yeah,
so his production with Flacco and his production with Watson, real, real similar. And I don't think there's any issue between those guys when it comes to chemistry on the field. It was really building last year,
right,
when Deshaun got hurt.
But you know, here's the funny part. So we both talked about this, and I think
it was the year before, though, with Jacoby Brissett than it was with Deshaun. That is true. So, but I thought they took care of that last year.
Looking at the first two games this season, it did feel like their chemistry was off. It just didn't – nothing seemed right. Like, they just –
Yeah, but was it their chemistry or was it Amari saying, I didn't play up to my expectations?
Well, it's a little bit of both. So that means that the chemistry wasn't working. But it drove me nuts because, you know, what I was watching was making me think, man, he had so much success with Joe last year that you're like, why doesn't this seem to be happening as easy? Is it the way that Deshaun throws the ball compared to the way that Joe throws the ball? And so, you know, and there had been rumblings maybe a little bit about maybe that was the case, but you know, you go back and you look at those numbers, Jeff, and you're 100% right. You know, his last three games with Flacco before he got hurt at the end of the season, you know, 265 yards, we talked about that game, 109 against Chicago, 77 against Jacksonville. And the numbers were similar, or even if you look at the last three games he had with Deshaun, the numbers were not as many yards, but the targets, he had more targets with Deshaun than he did with Joe. And so I was like, oh, and then I went back and I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to read headlines from last year. And one of the headlines is Channel 3 had it. The chemistry between Joe Flacco and Amari Cooper is off. That was last year. So, you know, so I'm like,
beg to differ.
Yeah. And so I'm just kind of looking at these quick headlines that were off the charts, I should say. Isn't that deceiving? You go and you look at it online, you're like, oh, they're off. They're no, it's off the charts is what they said. But there was also talk about, you know, just how these two were able to play together. But I do think you're right, Jeff, that the reason that might be thought of so heavily is that 265-yard game.
Well, and I think that was an incredible game. You know, and Amari's had some of those throughout his career, Andy, where he's just gone nuts. In fact, he's usually good for one of those a year, it seems. But he's had some amazing games during his career.
What,
at 226 back in 2019 when he was playing for Dallas. I mean, just some big games. 217 the year before against Philly.
And then, you know, last year, just looking at the game log, he had, five games with over 100 yards receptions last year, although he had that 98-yard game against Baltimore, so I don't know.
He's good.
I'll give him the curve on that one.
And he and Deshaun have no issues. At least it's not reflected in the productivity. How's that? It's real comparable. Last year, whether it was Flacco or whether it was Deshaun, it was different when it was the other guys. And that's okay because those guys, I don't think, are the caliber of quarterback that Deshaun Watson is or that Joe Flacco was last year for this team.
He had eight games of more than 89 yards last year. Eight. You know, between all the quarterbacks that they use. So, I don't know. They just need to get him going. Really? Isn't that what it's all about, Jeff? Just
yeah, and they
going.
Better because he might not be here next year. I mean, they didn't want to extend him. And by not wanting to extend him, I think that sends a message. They did, you know, rework some things and give him some money. Personally, I think the guy is a terrific wide receiver. I don't think he's CeeDee Lamb. You know, I don't think he's, you know, absolute top of the heap. But I'm glad he's on this team, and he's certainly the top of the heap here.
Yeah, I mean, I love watching him play, so I hope they can figure something out. I hope he stays here for a long time, but I'm wondering how they're going to look at the roster next year when you look at your offensive line that's got a lot of guys that are at 30 and above. And so I'm wondering how they're going to reassess that. By the way, you got to look at it right now because you've got to rebuild, and so that's the situation they're in. Hey, last night, a little bit of unique perspective on our Monday night games, the way they played it out last night with two games. Last night, we got two games next week on Monday night. Did you like it? Was it good for your viewing pleasure? Let me know. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Plus, we are going to talk Guardians with Paul Hoynes. Hey, Hoynesy, coming up at noon right here, Baskin and Phelps. 92.3 The Fan.
No, I think that whatever was wrong, I think got solved on Sunday. I think Amari needed to kind of get refocused a little bit, get rededicated, and he did that. He gut-checked himself, and he got himself back on track. So I don't think that this is going to be an ongoing issue for them. I think he's going to be an asset for Deshaun Watson going forward. And then when you bring David Njoku back into the mix, then he'll have his top two targets back out there. That will help a lot.
Oh, that was Mary Kay Cabot just moments ago on Baskin and Phelps talking about the relationship between Amari Cooper and Deshaun Watson out on the field. And is that as real as maybe you thought it was going into the game, that there might have been a lack of chemistry? All right, we're going to talk about that in a second.
Hogwash.
Hogwash, says Jeff. Jeff is going to disprove the theory of the lack of chemistry in just a moment. Rel is in Cleveland. Hi, Rel.
Hello, Rel.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas.
How are you?
Morning, afternoon. Yeah, I'm good, man. Just listening to you guys. I love to see y'all. Y'all my favorite dude. Y'all, Eddie.
Thank you.
Y'all was asking a question about, and you know, how can you fix the Browns? And you asked Mary Kay, and I love listening to Mary Kay because she's very knowledgeable and smart about what she's talking about. And I think we all know that they got that offensive line issues, mm-hmm. and that they could do better. They could do better up front with their protections. Now we're dealing with the injury bug with that offensive line. We've really been dealing with it all year. But last I checked, they started the season with four of the five starters from last year. You know what I'm saying? Like so I'm confused. Like the line can play better, but this is a good offensive line. Like up until recent years, and I mean this is an offensive line that gets respected throughout the league and amongst his peers and everything. So I'm scratching my head and wondering, like, what is going on? And Dan, I got your back, brother. You are right. I watched Joe Petonio, and I love him. We talk about Hall of Fame, but I watched this man get thrown around like a rag doll the first two or three games of this season. It just makes absolutely no sense to me. And when you ask, how can you fix something, and I'm confused at what are we trying to fix? I mean, if I go in the toilet and use the toilet and it's not working, I can tell that the handle needs fixing, so I'll replace the handle. With this team, I don't know where to start. And as a Browns fan, it gets so frustrating because it's like year in and year out, we're having these same old routine conversations about this team, and I'm confused. Listen, I don't know. I usually don't even call a team bad until like the fourth or fifth week. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about our team. I'm talking about just amongst the whole league because I watched this game. I've been loving this game since I was 8 years old. So I'm able to tell you exactly who you are at least by week five.
All right,
I don't want to call this Browns team a bad football team, but they're exhibiting bad habits like week in and week out. 2 weeks in a row, they showed up unprepared. And in this league, you get embarrassed when you show up unprepared. So maybe the fix is in between their ears and they can show up prepared. Thanks, guys.
Rel, thank you.
Thanks, Rel.
I think the aggravating part is like when you walk away and you still hear the water running for like 2 or 3 minutes and you're like, oh, the thing didn't catch. So then you got to go back in. You got to take the top off.
Got to lift it up.
And then all you have to do is just like –
touch
like,
it a little.
It's just a touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden that little balloon thing finally hits the mark it's supposed to. And then the water stops running.
We're just pouring a bunch of water in.
Toilet talk here on Baskin and Phelps. Doesn't get any better than that. All right, Jeff.
Toilets!
That's right. I think he's right to a point. You know, I think Rel hit a lot of good spots on there that I think we all kind of look at this. And I thought Rel was leaning back towards saying maybe this is coaching issues. Maybe that more of this is on the coaching staff than it is on the players. Players have to execute on the field, though. That's the only thing. I sit here and there are times when I really think, wow, we got outcoached, or what was Kevin thinking on that play? Why didn't they run the ball more? Why didn't they do this and that? And I think those are legit questions after a loss. I think after a win, we sit around and go, oh, they ran the ball just enough to get the victory. That's all we care about. All it is a win in the win column. We do that all the time. It's just frustrating. They're frustrating to watch, aren't they? They're a frustrating team to watch right now.
Well, sure.
I just want to make sure
it's hard to argue with that right now.
Let's go back to what Mary Kay said. You know, we were asking about Mary Kay, and we were talking about the chemistry with Deshaun Watson and Amari Cooper. I thought it was significantly better on Sunday. I thought you could not have asked for a better first play, confidence-wise, from your leading receiver, which was a spectacular catch, too, because he was covered, and a great throw from Deshaun on the first play offensively where they scored the touchdown. And I thought, this is great. Were there some moments a little bit later in the game where I think he had – how many drops did he have in the game? Two? I think he had at least – I know he had at least one. And I was like, oh, here we go again. What's going on? Why can't they connect? Is there a dysfunction to your leading receiver and your starting quarterback?
I don't think that's the case. You know, Amari, leading up to the game against the Giants, said, I've not played up to what I want to play up to, and I'll take care of that, and he did. I thought he played really well. I went back and took a look. And if you look at Amari's career, you know, he's had some games like the first two games. You know, there have been some moments where it's like, boy, is he out there? What's going on? But he always bounces back. He's a very consistent guy. He is prone to having these huge games that kind of skew things a little bit sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that last year. But I went back to last year because, you know, I've heard a lot, well, Amari and Deshaun, blah, 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 blah. Last year, in five games with Deshaun Watson, and I just broke it down, the five games where Deshaun played, and so I didn't count the Colts game where he didn't, you know, he played through like one or two passes and then got hurt. He caught 28 passes in five games with Deshaun. In four games with Joe Flacco, he caught 25. So that was three fewer. Mm-hmm. And in six games with DTR and P.J. Walker, he caught 19. So the issues, if he had any issues last year, were probably with the young guys trying to fill in, right? More games, fewer catches.
Mm-hmm.
Yardage-wise, it was real similar. Five games with Watson, it was 480. Four games with Flacco, it was 485. But remember, he had that 265-yard receiving game against Houston.
Right.
And I'm not going to say that skewed anything because that's, I mean, terrific. You want games like that. But that's why that yardage total is so high. And then he had one more touchdown with Flacco than he did with Deshaun, and none with the other guys. So,
yeah,
so his production with Flacco and his production with Watson, real, real similar. And I don't think there's any issue between those guys when it comes to chemistry on the field. It was really building last year,
right,
when Deshaun got hurt.
But you know, here's the funny part. So we both talked about this, and I think
it was the year before, though, with Jacoby Brissett than it was with Deshaun. That is true. But I thought they took care of that last year.
Looking at the first two games this season, it did feel like their chemistry was off. It just didn't – nothing seemed right. Like, they just –
Yeah, but was it their chemistry or was it Amari saying, I didn't play up to my expectations?
Well, it's a little bit of both. So that means that the chemistry wasn't working. But it drove me nuts because, you know, what I was watching was making me think, man, he had so much success with Joe last year that you're like, why doesn't this seem to be happening as easy? Is it the way that Deshaun throws the ball compared to the way that Joe throws the ball? And so, you know, and there had been rumblings maybe a little bit about maybe that was the case, but – you know, you go back and you look at those numbers, Jeff, and you're 100% right. You know, his last three games with Flacco before he got hurt at the end of the season, you know, 265 yards, we talked about that game, 109 against Chicago, 77 against Jacksonville. And the numbers were similar, or even if you look at the last three games he had with Deshaun, the numbers were not as many yards, but the targets, he had more targets with Deshaun than he did with Joe. And so I was like, oh, and then I went back and I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to read headlines from last year. And one of the headlines is Channel 3 had it. The chemistry between Joe Flacco and Amari Cooper is off. That was last year. So, you know, so I'm like, huh.
Beg to differ.
Yeah. And so I'm just kind of looking at these quick headlines that were off the charts, I should say. Isn't that deceiving? You go and you look at it online, you're like, oh, they're off. They're no, it's off the charts is what they said. But there was also talk about, you know, just how these two were able to play together. But I do think you're right, Jeff, that the reason that might be thought of so heavily is that 265-yard game.
Well, and I think that was an incredible game.
You know,
and Amari's had some of those throughout his career, Andy, where he's just gone nuts. In fact, He's usually good for one of those a year, it seems. But he's had some amazing games during his career.
What,
at 226 back in 2019 when he was playing for Dallas. I mean, just some big games. 217 the year before against Philly.
And then, you know, last year, just looking at the game log, he had, what, he had five games with over 100 yards receptions last year, although he had that 98-yard game against Baltimore. So, I don't know.
He's good.
I'll give him the curve on that one.
And he and Deshaun have no issues. At least it's not reflected in the productivity. How's that? It's real comparable. Last year, whether it was Flacco or whether it was Deshaun, it was different when it was the other guys. And that's okay because those guys, I don't think, are the caliber of quarterback that Deshaun Watson is or that Joe Flacco was last year for this team.
He had eight games of more than 89 yards last year. Eight, you know, between all the quarterbacks that they used. So, I don't know. They just need to get him going. Really? Isn't that what it's all about, Jeff? Just
yeah, and they
going.
Better because he might not be here next year. I mean, they didn't want to extend him. And by not wanting to extend him, I think that sends a message. They did, you know, rework some things and give him some money. Personally, I think the guy is a terrific wide receiver. I don't think he's CeeDee Lamb. You know, I don't think he's, you know, absolute top of the heap. But I'm glad he's on this team, and he's certainly the top of the heap here.
Yeah, I mean, I love watching him play, so I hope they can figure something out. I hope he stays here for a long time, but I'm wondering how they're going to look at the roster next year when you look at your offensive line that's got a lot of guys that are at 30 and above. And so I'm wondering how they're going to reassess that. By the way, you got to look at it right now because you've got to rebuild, and so that's the situation they're in. Hey, last night, a little bit of unique perspective on our Monday night games, the way they played it out last night with two games. Last night, we got two games next week on Monday night. Did you like it? Was it good for your viewing pleasure? Let me know. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Plus, we are going to talk Guardians with Paul Hoynes. Hey, Hoynesy, coming up at noon right here, Baskin and Phelps. 92.3 The Fan. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Paul Hoynes will join us at noon, so he's about 17 minutes away. We'll talk to him about what's going on with the Guardians, how they're looking for the postseason, how the rotation might set up, and who's hot, who's not to get going here for the last five games of the regular season as the Guardians take on the Reds over the next 2 days, and then they will finish out the regular season against Houston, which could be very, very important for when you're jockeying for position, whether it's the one seed, the two seed, or wherever they are. So Paul Hoynes will join us coming up at noon. Last night in the NFL, we all watched Buffalo take down Jacksonville 47-10, and then Cincinnati, even though Joe Burrow had a great game last night, he just would not couldn't lift his team to one more touchdown as Washington was able to beat the Bengals as the Bengals fall to 0-3 in a 38-33 final. But what was interesting was, last night, the way you watched it was you had two games on Monday Night Football, and one started at 7:30 and the other one started at 8:15. Next week, they'll do that again. Tennessee is at Miami. Tennessee is 0-3. Miami is 1-2. And in the nightcap, you're going to get Seattle, who's 3-0, going up against Detroit in Detroit, who's 2-1.
That'd
but again,
be a fun game.
I think it's going to be. And by the way, I thought you know, last night's late game was a great game. I thought the Cincinnati-Washington game turned out to be exactly what you want on Monday Night Football.
And two good young quarterbacks, LSU guys, going nuts against each other.
What do you think, though, about this 7:30, 8:15 Monday night kickoff? I know what I think. I'm curious what you think.
I normally don't like it. And I think 7 o'clock feels a little early for a weekday night game, you know? Finish dinner, do the dishes, whatever. Boom, there's the game. It worked out great for me personally last night. I thought that was great fun. And so I watched that game, and you said it earlier. All of a sudden, it's like, well, this one's over. Boom, hey, here's another game.
I loved it.
So I checked back, you know, periodically. And from a fantasy standpoint, I had guys in both games. So it was, you know, key to watch. So it worked out great last night personally for me, which, you know, my big concern, of course.
Of course, it's all about you.
I don't know that I like the two Monday night games. I don't think it makes it quite as special as having the one game on Monday night.
I kept wondering who's watching who was watching the Buffalo game after the other game started. That's what I kept thinking
Buffalo
about.
Buffalo fans?
Yeah, I thought the audience
Jacksonville
got,
fans.
I thought the audience got real limited on that game once we saw that Buffalo was not going to have any problem. I like the for some reason I don't. What were they doing? 6 o'clock at 9 o'clock before when they had to do it during COVID, right? And they played two games on Monday night. I think it was six and nine.
And remember when they used to have the doubleheader to start the season too?
Yeah,
they did it the same way. They had one really late. It is weird having. And I know we have this during the regular season, you know, on a normal Sunday, but it was weird having two Monday night games back and forth. If both games had been really tight, Andy, I don't know that I would have liked that. I know you can do picture in picture, but
I think it worked out perfect yesterday.
Yeah,
because you got a chance to watch the early game, and it kind of just, you know, you when Buffalo took that early lead, you knew, okay, I'm going over to the other game. But I wanted to watch Cincinnati anyway. That's what I was. I was in it for the 8:15 kickoff. I don't, Jeff, could you start at 7 and 8:30? And that would give you 45 minutes difference. I wonder if that would make things a little bit different. So say instead
of a 7.
It would
give you an extra 45 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know if that, to me, that
kind of
would
pick you up at halftime of the first game.
It kind of worked out, though, yesterday. Wasn't it close to halftime?
Yeah, it was pretty close.
And, I mean, you don't know what you're going to get. And you can go back and forth. What if you went 8:45? And 7.
Oh, that's if you're playing an East Coast game, Andy, that's a late starting time. I mean, it was late enough last night. You know what I mean?
I got to be honest. In general, I like it, though. I like having two games on Monday night. Yeah.
I think it just worked out so perfectly last night that you thought that was great.
I just think it's weird because you end up with, although both are on national TV, it kind of feels like one's a regional game and one's the nationally televised game. The ABC game comes out to be that nationally televised game, right?
Well,
it's going to feel that way when you're
where Joe and Troy are.
Yeah. Is this going to stick?
I don't think so. I think it'll be an occasional thing. Like, we're going to see it next week. And good games next week. But I, you know, and hard to say which game was the better game going into that one last night.
Right.
You might say it's Buffalo.
I,
you know, it was the Buffalo-Jacksonville game looked like a better matchup than the Commanders against the Bengals.
I thought that going into
it,
too.
It didn't play that way, certainly.
Hmm. Do we like games having their own individual? I mean, there's just so many platforms now that you could put games on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you realize, like, every Big Ten game has its own national audience. I don't know if that still works out with the 18 team. Maybe that's not true. But I do know, like, when it comes to basketball, they were able to do that. And so do we like it better when there's only one game at a time, or do we like multiple games that give you that whole red zone feeling? Because, like,
On Monday night, I like the one game.
Yeah, I can't. I don't want to agree with you. I think I like one game
at
a time.
You never want to agree with me.
I think I like one game at a time on Monday and Sunday night, rather than, you know, like, having trying to have.
Sunday night would be chaos after watching all those games in the afternoon.
To have two at night?
I would think.
I think it's better for the sport, though, to have those showcase games, to have the night games. I think I would rather have two games on Monday than a game on Thursday. I just never could get hooked on the Thursday night game.
We all know why they're doing it.
Right.
Cha-ching. Teams don't like playing on a short week. The only thing they like about it is, now we have a few extra days off. It's like a mini bye. But teams just don't look as sharp on Thursday night. They just don't. I mean, they most of them just play it on Sunday, you know?
I wonder if they're ever going to try to do a Friday nighter. Well, they can't, because of antitrust laws right now, right?
I hope not.
I think during the college football season, they don't do it. Unless they're in a weird, like, week zero or something like that, or after the college football season regularly ends. I like it, though. I did like it last night. Yeah, it worked out perfect, and I got to watch both games for the most part. Because I'm glad for you. Well, no, I know, and I don't mind watching Red Zone. I was watching Red Zone on Sunday, but I'm much better a football fan, I think, when I can watch one game at a time, or maybe two. And so I don't think that there's a real issue with having two Monday night games. I don't have the issue. Would you kill the Thursday night game to have two Mondays, or just one on Monday?
I can deal with Thursday if I have to. I just don't. I'd rather have one on Monday, one on Thursday, rather than two on Monday.
And then next week, Seattle, Detroit will be fun to watch. It's an 8:15 start. That's the ABC game. What say you, Dan Menigan? Should they leave two games on Monday night?
I will do anything I can to get rid of Thursday night football. I hate Thursday night football.
Okay, yeah. So I'm not alone.
It's not the product that the rest of the...
The television product isn't bad, though. I think Prime does a great job. And,
oh, without
man,
question.
They sink tons of cash into that broadcast.
Al Michaels, baby.
Prime Vision is must watch. I mean, the fact that you get the All-22, they're giving you who's rushing, they're giving you all that stuff. You end up learning more about football, paying attention to that. I mean, the Prime Vision part is great. It's the overall football product on the field. It's just, well, let's face it, it's crap.
It's a bad football product. You know what? It's going to be a lot better when Travis Kelce takes over that spot on Thursday nights and Herbie's out. I think it'll be more exciting. I don't know. I mean, I like Herbie on college. Wow. I'm not a big Herbie fan on the NFL.
They're all
I'm just
wallpaper.
Not.
They're all wallpaper. It's the quality of the product that's on the
field. I don't think Greg Olson's wallpaper. I like listening to him. There are plenty of good analysts out there.
I think Collinsworth is terrific. Tom Brady's fun. Troy Aikman's outstanding. Dan, take this the right way. You're the type of guy who could turn down the television and enjoy the game just as much.
Yes, that is a factual statement.
And that's okay. But they're not all wallpaper. Those guys are very good at what they do.
Yeah.
Now there are other. I think the upper echelon NFL guys are outstanding. I really enjoy listening to Collinsworth. I think he's great. Aikman is, I think, terrific. Brady's going to find himself.
I'm going to tell you why.
Play by play and color, Andy, are like pizza. There's a lot of ways to do it, and everybody likes something a little different.
All right, I'll buy into that. I don't know. I think about some of the analysts and some of the play-by-play guys, and I think that they're a difference maker in some of these games. They are. Think about it. I mean, we spent the weekend talking about Jim Donovan and how he is, and talking to, like I was talking to Josh Cribbs about this on Sunday, on Saturday. I know you can ding all you want. But, you know, he even made the comment that he couldn't wait to go back to hear the highlight with Jim when he had a great play because he wanted to know how that was, that the voice becomes embedded into the play as much as the video, that like we kind of accept the voice that goes with it, especially when you have great play-by-play guys on the radio. And if you can sync it up to the visual on it, it becomes legendary, right? It becomes legendary in that way. Speaking of great, Paul Hoynes. Nobody covers the Guardians like he does. Hey, Hoynesy, Cleveland.com. Next, Baskin and Phelps right here, 92.3 The Fan.